welcome back to the program. We talked last week on this program about the overgrown military intelligence complex, the fact that it has grown so large it may actually put us at greater risk. The other side of the same coin is that is the bureaucracy so large and its need to self-sustain so great that it cannot allow itself to see success or even something akin to victory in the war on terror? My guest today, Fawaz Girgis, argues in his new book, The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, that even before the killing of bin Laden, Al-Qaeda had lost much of its viability. Rather than getting stronger, it seemed that Al-Qaeda peaked with the events of 9/11 and that the current winds sweeping the Middle East have left little room for Al-Qaeda to operate. We're going to talk about this today with Fawaz Girgis. He's the director of the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics. He's a professor of Middle Eastern politics and international relations there. It is my pleasure to welcome him to the program to talk about his new book, The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, just out from Oxford University Press. Fawaz Girgis, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. One of the things you argue is that really 9/11 was kind of the peak of Al-Qaeda, that after that, when we attacked the Taliban in Afghanistan, that Al-Qaeda had been effectively decapitated.
It really was. Al-Qaeda was no longer as an effective organization by the end of 2002. Al-Qaeda was militarily defeated by the end of 2002. Scattered all over the places, almost many governments in the world were on the hunt for Al-Qaeda. Muslim public opinion did not materialize for Al-Qaeda. And the reality is, I would argue, if it was not for our war on terror, the American war on terror, the war would have been concluded decisively by the beginning of 2003. One of the arguments I make in my book, The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, is that the U.S. war on terror, in particular, the American invasion and occupation of Iraq, was the oxygen that has sustained Al-Qaeda. That if it was not for the oxygen that was given to Al-Qaeda by the American invasion and occupation of Iraq, we would not really be talking about Al-Qaeda the way that we have been in the last 7 years or so.
Talk about that period of time between 2003 and 2006 when Al-Qaeda, as you say, became stronger because of the invasion of Iraq.
Well, you know, before the American-led invasion and occupation of Iraq, the bulk of Muslim public opinion did not buy the argument that the United States was waging a war against Islam and Muslims. In fact, before the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, Osama bin Laden believed that if the United States invades Afghanistan, there would be a river of recruits, of Muslim recruits, who would journey to Afghanistan and fight the United States in the same way that they journeyed in the 1980s and fought the Soviet Empire. In fact, the river of recruit turned to be a trickle of recruits. Fewer than two dozens Muslims journeyed to Afghanistan after 2001 in order to fight for Al-Qaeda. This tells you a great deal how Muslim public opinion perceived the American, basically, war in Afghanistan. It was a war against the Taliban that harbored Al-Qaeda. So when the United States invaded Iraq in 2003, there was a qualitative shift in how Arab and Muslim public opinion perceived the United States. That is, the bulk of Arab and Muslim public opinion believed that the American invasion of Iraq, since Iraq had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda, nothing to do with 9/11, was basically an attack against an Arab and Muslim country, an attack against Muslim faith and Muslim societies. And that's why, after 2003, thousands of Arabs and Muslims journeyed to Iraq to fight against the American forces and the coalition forces. And Al-Qaeda used the American invasion and occupation of Iraq as a mobilizational tool to say, well, look, we told you so. The United States was not just waging a war against Al-Qaeda. The United States was trying to occupy, humiliate, and subjugate Arabs and Muslims using Iraq as an example.
Explain the ways in which this gave rise to a much stronger Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
You know, many Americans, many of our fellow citizens probably don't know that there had been no Al-Qaeda in Iraq before the American-led invasion and occupation of Iraq. no al-Qaeda whatsoever. Nasty as he was, the late Saddam Hussein, the late president of Iraq, was a secular fundamentalist, as opposed to Osama bin Laden, who was a religious fundamentalist. So in this particular sense, the United States invasion and occupation of Iraq created one of the most potent and lethal al-Qaeda local groups in Iraq. Tens of thousands, at one point in 2005, 2006, al-Qaeda in Iraq numbered almost thousands. That is, the numbers of al-Qaeda in Iraq exceeded the number of Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda. Before the American-led invasion and occupation of Iraq, not even a single suicide bombing, not even a single suicide bombing had taken place in Iraq, in Saddam Hussein, Iraq. After the U.S. invasion, 4,000, almost 4,000 suicide bombings did take place in Iraq between 2003 and 2007. Even today, as we talk, you have suicide bombings every other week or so. So the reality is, the American the narrative that was sold to American citizens after 9/11 is that the United States had no choice but to go to Iraq in order to defeat terrorism. The reality is the American war on terror, particularly the invasion and occupation of Iraq, has created many more terrorists than they existed on the morning after 9/11.
What do we learn from looking at the Sunni awakening in Iraq, and what does that tell us about how weak the support, the underlying support, had been for al-Qaeda in Iraq?
You know, this is really a very, very critical question. One of the basic fundamental arguments some of us made after 9/11 is that al-Qaeda was a fringe, tiny, insignificant group. Even though it was dangerous, al-Qaeda is still dangerous, that's not the question. But it's one thing to tell the American public that al-Qaeda is dangerous, but it represents only a security irritant. We made the argument that al-Qaeda never represented a strategic existential threat to America and the American people. Al-Qaeda never, the al-Qaeda ideology never resonated with Arab and Muslim public opinion, including Iraqi and Afghanistani and Pakistani and Egyptian public opinion. Yet the narrative that was fed to the American public after 9/11, given the painful attacks, the hurtful attacks, the insidious nature of the 9/11 attacks, is that al-Qaeda was part and parcel of a broad coalition that really threatens American values and Western values. The reality is what we have learned in Iraq, what we have learned in the Arab world in the last 8 months, there is a huge divide between Arab and Muslim public opinion and the destructive nihilistic ideology of the global jihad. In fact, Iraq turned out to be the graveyard of al-Qaeda. Iraq turned out to be the graveyard of al-Qaeda because Sunni public opinion in Iraq and Sunni public opinion throughout the world realized that al-Qaeda was a nihilistic and destructive and dangerous organization. It was killing civilians. Tens of thousands of civilians were killed, massacred, brutalized by al-Qaeda in Iraq, and that was basically sent a major powerful lesson to Arabs and Muslims that al-Qaeda was a dangerous entity. Al-Qaeda was not just an enemy of America and the West. Al-Qaeda was an enemy of the Arab and Muslim world, and that's why Sunni public opinion by 2005, 2006, turned out against al-Qaeda with a vengeance. In fact, I would argue it was this particular, the incidents, the bombings, the brutal, indiscriminate attacks against civilians in Iraq was really the final nail in the coffin of al-Qaeda, not just in Iraq, in the coffin of al-Qaeda central of Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden in 2007 went out publicly, the first time ever, and apologized for the brutal and deadly attacks carried out by his local henchman, Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi. Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi was the late leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq. So this tells you a great deal that neither Iraqi Sunni public opinion nor Arab public opinion that we have seen now in the last 8 months basically thinks that al-Qaeda has anything to offer to Arab and Muslim societies.
How much was that negativity directed towards al-Qaeda in Iraq as an entity, and how much of it came out of the mistakes, the foolishness by which Zarqawi operated there?
Well, I think Zarqawi's lethal and deadly and destructive and brutal attacks really served as a awakening call for Arab and Muslim public opinion. That was really, in fact, it spoke volumes about the nihilistic nature of al-Qaeda in Iraq. But some of us had argued before the American-led invasion of Iraq is that there was a divide between Muslim public opinion and al-Qaeda. We made it very clear. In my book, The Far Enemy, Why Jihad Went Global, published in 2005 by Cambridge University Press, I showed, in pages after pages, how leading clerics, how opinion makers, how people in that part of the world who basically criticized American foreign policy vehemently disagreed with the terroristic methodology of al-Qaeda. And we cautioned the United States to be careful about lumping al-Qaeda with other clerics, with other Islamist groups who basically did not practice terrorism along the lines of al-Qaeda. Yet, there was an ideological narrative in the United States that lumped al-Qaeda with other groups who did not subscribe to the global jihad. And that particular narrative, I would argue, provided al-Qaeda with the oxygen, the ideological ammunition that it used after 2003 to tell a critical but small segment of Arab and Muslim public opinion that the United States was waging a war against Islam as opposed to a war against al-Qaeda.
After Zarqawi was killed in June of 2006, talk a little bit about how bin Laden and Zawahiri responded to that, how they tried to keep al-Qaeda alive in Iraq.
Well, really, that was it. I mean, this is, again, another critical question. By the time that the United States killed Abu Mas'ab al-Zarqawi, the chief of al-Qaeda in Iraq, al-Qaeda was on the ropes. The simple reason, because not because the American was basically hitting very hard, but because Muslim public opinion turned against al-Qaeda. In fact, even though al-Qaeda has suffered a catastrophic military defeat in Iraq, the more important defeat that al-Qaeda has suffered was what? Losing Muslim minds and hearts. After all, al-Qaeda could not basically challenge the United States without convincing Arab and Muslim public opinion that it was the vanguard of resistance against the United States. Well, the overwhelming number of Arabs and Muslims realized that al-Qaeda was no vanguard. Al-Qaeda was the enemy of Arabs and Muslims. And that's why, in fact, after 2006, Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri tried very hard to basically limit the damage inflicted on al-Qaeda's ideology by Zarqawi in Iraq. They tried to apologize to Muslim public opinion. They tried to warn their local affiliates to avoid attacks that basically kill civilians. Osama bin Laden apologized publicly to Muslims and said even the Prophet Muhammad basically committed mistakes. So what? Forgive Zarqawi for his mistakes. Ayman Zawahiri had a town hall meeting in which he basically tried to distance himself from what Zarqawi did. And most of the question to Ayman Zawahiri, the current chief who replaced Osama bin Laden as the emir of al-Qaeda, was that, why do you do what you do? Why do you kill civilians? Why do you carry these attacks in the name of Islam and Muslims? There was a revolt, not only by Muslims against al-Qaeda. The most important revolt against al-Qaeda came from former militants, who were part of al-Qaeda and the militant Islamist family, who basically came to the conclusion that al-Qaeda was endangering the very survival of the Islamist movement. And they took Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri to task. They basically reprimanded them publicly. They even told Osama bin Laden, some of the leading former militants and some of his disciples, they told Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri, your actions are harming the Muslim community. Your actions are violating the ethical premises of the Muslim community. That was it. So even though al-Qaeda was really effectively defeated in 2002, and even though that al-Qaeda was managed to survive and prosper because of the American invasion and occupation of Iraq, by 2006, Al-Qaeda lost the hearts and minds of Muslims. I would argue that was it. And even though, I mean, we can say that terrorism exists, even though we can say that local branches exist, the reality is now terrorism is more of a security nuisance. Terrorism will be with us, unfortunately, for the next 10 years. We have to find ways and means to manage the threat of terrorism. We have to educate the American public that even though, God forbid, one of these days, one bloody militant or terrorist might succeed in attacking one target in the United States, this should not be seen as basically as an existential strategic threat to the United States. What I'm trying to say really here is that in my book, in my current book, The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, I say you cannot put closure to the war on terror. You cannot begin the process of really trying to dismantle the huge bureaucracy that the United States has established since 9/11. You have almost nearly 1 million men and women,
right,
basically with high security clearances. Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda project is what I call the $5 trillion project. We, the United States of America, we have spent $5 trillion trying to hunt between 1 and 2,000 men at the height of its power in 2001. What I'm trying to say, you cannot begin the process putting closure to the war on terror without basically what I call you need to educate the American public, because the terrorism narrative, the fear of terrorism, the irrational fear has taken hold of the American imagination. And you ask Americans, they tell you Al-Qaeda represents the most important threat, critical threat to America. And that's why in my book, The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, what I try to do is to lay to rest some of the myths that have taken hold of the American imagination, some of the ideological narrative that they're not empirical, they're not really based on facts, that basically have been fed to the American public since 2001. My really hope, and I'm putting a plug for my book, I'm really hope that some readers, some Americans will take a look at the evidence I present in my book and make up their minds about whether Al-Qaeda represents just a bloody security irritant and nuisance as opposed to a strategic threat that sustains and maintains the huge bureaucracy that has been put in place since 2001.
What about the rising threat that is argued today from Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula based in Yemen?
There's no doubt that some local branches now, in particular Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in Yemen, represents, according to the American intelligence community, a more potent threat than Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, that is the Al-Qaeda, what the remnants of Al-Qaeda, the remnants of Osama bin Laden, Naim al-Zawahiri. And this is serious stuff. We're talking about between 50 and 300 men in Yemen. We don't know the exact numbers. Nobody knows. But the reality is, again, what you need in Yemen is a local contact strategy. That is, Al-Qaeda in Yemen will live and die by its relationship with the various tribes that basically host Al-Qaeda in Yemen. An American strategy should not be based on unilateral actions by the United States, because you don't want to antagonize Yemeni public opinion. You want to work with local Yemeni tribes in order to really encircle Al-Qaeda, in order to slay the beast from within, as opposed to an all-out American war. The local option is often the most effective option. This is the reality. The question in Yemen is very difficult, because the reality is Yemen now is almost descending into all-out, civil war, not just civil war, but tribal war. And Yemen, like the rest of the Arab countries, is undergoing tremendous social and political upheaval. And I fear that if Yemen descends into all-out war, that Al-Qaeda will find ways and means to embed itself with some tribes and portray itself as the spearhead of opposition to the Yemeni regime, the President Ali Abdullah Saleh. Keep in mind, Al-Qaeda is a social parasite. It is a social parasite that feeds on instability and violence and war. And if Yemen descends into war, you can imagine the consequences to Al-Qaeda. And that's why the United States has been trying very hard, the Obama administration, to its credit, has been trying very hard to convince its ally, the Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh, who's been in power for more than 30 years, to basically transition, to basically accept a settlement whereby the Yemeni people will determine their own affairs. I mean, I think the United States has really been pushing very hard. The reality is Saleh does not want to basically relinquish power. Here you have a typical bloody oppressive Arab autocrat like Mubarak, like Gaddafi, like Bashar al-Assad in Syria. And it's not just local branches here. The most important security irritant to the United States is the so-called the homegrown radicalization and terrorism. You have more than almost 50 Americans now who have been arrested, and some of whom, most of whom, have been found guilty of giving material support to terrorism. I would argue that the homegrown radicalization is much more important and much more lethal than local branches of al-Qaeda in Iraq and Yemen. And in my book, I show in Chapter 5 the relationship between the American war on terror and homegrown terrorism. That is, there is a link between the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the war in Pakistan in particular, and some of the radicalization of some young Muslims who relatively integrated in Western societies. So it's not just ideology that drives some young Muslims in Western societies to the arms of al-Qaeda. It's also the false perception or misperception that the United States is waging war against their Muslim communities, first in Iraq and now in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And that's why, even though the United States is winning technically in Pakistan, the United States has broken the backbone of al-Qaeda, the original al-Qaeda organization in Pakistan. American attacks in Pakistan have radicalized the urban, some leading elements of the urban classes and the junior officer, junior officers in Pakistan, and tiny elements of Pakistani and Afghani and Muslim individuals in Western societies. This is the sad reality. Technically, the United States is winning the war in Pakistan. I would argue strategically, you have now what we call blowback, because some individuals are taking action into their own hands in order to exact vengeance against their own country and community, the United States, because of the mistaken belief that the United States is waging a war against their faith and their country.
One of the things you talk about is that al-Qaeda really had no place at the table in what we've seen in terms of these uprisings in the Arab Spring. As there is more and more instability as a result of that, as things take their natural course, is al-Qaeda trying to take advantage of those situations and find some place at the table?
Al-Qaeda is a social parasite. The reason why al-Qaeda prospered in Afghanistan, because Afghanistan descended into all-out war after the Soviet armies left Afghanistan in 1989. The same thing in Somalia. The same thing in Iraq after 2003. The same thing in Yemen now. There is a potential that if the situation in the Arab countries do not transition into peaceful and democratic societies, that if instability basically becomes the order of the day in Egypt and Libya and Yemen and Syria, there is the potential that al-Qaeda could basically try to fill the vacuum of power in these countries. The United States is extremely concerned now about Libya. The United States is much more concerned about Yemen, because Yemen seems to be descending into all-out war. But let me make one point very clear here, and I really would like your listeners, if there is one point I want to really get across today, is that one of the major lessons that we have learned in the last 8 months is that there is a huge divide between the global jihadist ideology of al-Qaeda and the pulse public opinion in the Arab and Muslim world. While al-Qaeda calls for violence and terrorism, millions of Arabs have spoken. They call for protest and political mobilization and peaceful transition of power. The rallying cry in the Arab world are not about the fierce urgency to fight the United States and the West. the rallying cry in the Arab world in the last 8 months are what? Bread and butter and freedom, dignity. It's about the separations of power, about elections, creating constitutional state. The rallying cry in the Arab world are not those of Al-Qaeda, about establishing a caliphate, a central Islamic authority, not even about establishing Islamic-based states based on Islamic law. Actually, it's based on establishing constitutional-based states. Truly, if we have learned one lesson, some of us, in the last 8 months, is that the values of the overwhelming number of Arabs and Muslims are not the values of Al-Qaeda and militancy, are universal values you and I and all of us subscribe to. They're really about jobs, about freedom, about dignity. And that's what the United States did not really get after 9/11. I mean, think about it. I mean, your listeners now. What was the biggest question that dominated the airways in America after 9/11? Why they hate us so much? Think how much ink was spilled on this silly and reductionist question. Every time I appeared on American television, the question was for me, tell us why Arabs and Muslims hate America so much. President Bush and the new conservatives said they hate us so much because they hate our values. They don't like our democracy. They don't like the fact that we are a prosperous nation. And some of us said, nonsense. In fact, Arabs and Muslims want the same values, not of Bush and the new conservatives. They want a better quality of life for their children. They want jobs. They want dignity. They want freedom. They want freedom from oppression, political oppression, and economic, dismal economic conditions. I'm not suggesting that there is no anti-American sentiments because of American foreign policies perceived, but they don't hate the West and American values. American values, in fact, resonate with more Arabs and Muslims than Al-Qaeda's values and militancy values in general.
One of the things that brings this into bold relief is the simple fact of how little impact in the region the death of bin Laden had.
Whatsoever. I mean, what amazed me about the death of Osama bin Laden, it did not get on the radar screen. It did not resonate. That part of the world has traveled much further beyond Al-Qaeda, beyond 9/11. Truly. In fact, and that's understandable. In fact, while the Middle East, while the Muslim world has really, forgotten all about Al-Qaeda, it's we in the United States, 10 years after Al-Qaeda and the terrorism narrative has taken hold of our imagination. It was painful. I mean, keep in mind, almost 3,000 American, innocent Americans and foreigners were killed on that bloody morning. But I would argue, it's about time to deconstruct the myth that has taken hold of the American imagination, because it's only then, by laying to rest some of these myths, we can really put closure to the war on terror. We can begin the process of de-escalation, really bringing American troops home, trying to basically put an end to the huge bureaucracy that has, swollen and also has devoured trillions of dollars. I mean, you can imagine, let's just give you an idea, the CIA budget on the morning of 9/11 was $40 billion, one single entity. The CIA annual budget now is $80 billion a year. I mean, think about it. Between 2001 and today, we have spent about $5 trillion in direct and indirect costs. In fact, President Barack Obama, since he was inaugurated, he has been fighting for his life in order to invest $1 trillion in trying to fuel the economy. And even now, think of the great debate that has taken place in the United States, because Barack Obama was investing in the infrastructure of the American economy, $700 billion when he came to office. And yet, Americans and the political establishment have tolerated the spending of almost $5 trillion. The $5 trillion have contributed to American economic decline vis-a-vis China and India and Brazil. We have spent the last 10 years fighting a fringe tiny organization, while our competitors focus on what? Putting their economic house in order. Putting the economic building blocks at powerful economies. So the reality is, the costs and the consequences of 9/11 transcend America's relation with the Muslim world, they have brought about a major shift in international politics and international economic. Just in terms of opportunity costs, we spent 10 years focusing on Al-Qaeda, and the opportunity costs have been tremendous for American society, for the balance of power economically and politically in the international system.
Fawaz Girgis, the book is The Rise and Fall of Al-Qaeda, just out from Oxford University Press. Fawaz, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.